Welcome back to Life on the Loop Golf Podcast, hosted by myself, Marcus Crowe, and the bald man, Patrick Faraday. Two guys grinding it out, lugging bags, and living the dream. Join us every Wednesday for Tales from the Course, casual conversation, and a dose of golf banter. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and follow us on the socials, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, OnlyFans, at Life on the Loop 9.
You said OnlyFans. I've infected your mind.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Guest week, and we have
a belter.
An absolute peach in store. We are about to hop on with a PGA Tour professional, Mr. Patrick Faraday's ex-pal, you're still pals, but ex...
That's his name. Jesus Christ.
Well, no. You haven't let me finish yet. Okay. Mr. Patrick Faraday's ex-pal slash current pal ex-high school friend. Ben Taylor.
Okay, we could have just said that. Yeah, but you're right. We just jumped on it. Ben Taylor, English PGA Tour player, had a successful season. This season just gone. Barely missed out on FedEx Cup. Just a great lad. I met him when I was probably 16, 17 at high school. We played there for a year together and he just pushed on. He was always light years above us. I mean, I was there hitting hosels for days and he's out there just knocking down flagsticks. So
pure in it.
You know, there's levels. But yeah, ladies and gents, enjoy our conversation with Ben Taylor.
All right, sweet. Sorry it took me so long, boys. I've been fucking manic over it. Thanks for bearing with us. Oh, cheers.
Yeah. I thought, I was like, Pat, does Ben even like you? He keeps giving excuses.
honestly, I just moved house and stuff. So every time I thought I had a free week, I was just slammed, you know? So anyway, we made it. Here we are.
All right. Well, here we are. We've been trying to make this happen for a minute now. We have one of my old pals from back across the pond, from the junior days. He's on the pod with us today. Mr. Ben Taylor, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, boys. Thanks for having us on. I'm glad to be chatting with you tonight.
Absolutely. So for the listeners, obviously they heard the intro. You are a PGA Tour player living the dream right now.
We come in all different shapes and sizes.
That's funny. Marcus has probably looked up your bio on the PGA Tour website. I'll have all the stats. He's a stat man.
I did. I looked on the bio. So we'll have to run it through a little bit, whether these are correct currently. Currently.
Yes. You actually have.
Hell yeah. I love it. He's a fellow D2 man. We're all technically D2. You're a bit better than us, though.
Yeah.
You're a little bit better than us.
You also got your stats slightly wrong because he was D2 and then D1.
Well, obviously, yeah, he's upgraded, hasn't he? Obviously an absolute baller.
If you get this stat, I don't know, you probably still are the only guy that won the national champs D2 and D1.
I believe I am. Somebody looked it up and was able to prove it like 6 months ago to make sure it was still factual, and they said it was, so... Hopefully it stands and no one else does it. That'd be nice to talk about in 10 more years' time, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, that's pretty sick.
We'll see. Yeah.
Well, we got a similar alignment. We both won a D2 championship. Come on. I played at St.
That's
Lee.
It?
Yeah. Not yeah, D1. I wasn't good enough to upgrade.
I want
to catch. I remember my Nova days playing against St. Leo. Drove over to Lake Victor. That's it.
Oh, Lake Joe.
Yeah, I remember those days.
In the absolute middle of the boonies.
Yeah, it was. I actually remember, this was when I moved back to Orlando after college, and I did a West Florida Golf Tour event. It was a two-dayer, and I remember looking on the schedule, and I was like, Lake Javita, I was like, that's a funny name, isn't it? And I remember driving through the gates, and I went, I've been here before! I thought, it's the St. Leo's tournament. Yes, I remember it very well.
How was college? So obviously, you know, we all did the whole transformation from boarding school, even English schools in general, to college. So you were always thinking golf was the the aim, right, and try and get, be as good as possible. And obviously PGA is the, was the goal. Was that something that you thought about in college, or was it just enjoy golf and see where it goes?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I played every sport. One of the main reasons I went to Millfield, where I met Pat, was, you know, to make golf a priority. The school I was at before, we like did well to have them. We told them I wasn't going to play rugby anymore because rugby was the big sport in the first term. And I was a bit of a nutcase on the rugby pitch. So I was always getting hurt all the time. And when we
what
told them,
that, were you?
Well, there's a funny story to this. I started off as high half, and then I went to wing, and then I went to center, and then I got fatter and fatter. So then I became flanker, and then ended up being hooker.
No, man's done he's done the full back line.
Yeah, mate, I just slowly made my way into positions that meant you'd have to run less and less and less. So, literally, like it was a bit of a ball ache to, you know, have them give me permission to not play rugby anymore. And then I kind of knew I wanted to follow the likes of Luke Donald, Paul Casey, you know, guys that did the whole US college thing. Because as a kid, I played ice hockey. I loved watching American football. My uncle played American football in the Great British League. So I always kind of liked American sports anyway. And the main reason I went to Millfield was literally to focus on golf full time and basically, you know, get used to living away from home, living on your own, gaining your independence. And I'm sure the same reason you boys did. So I kind of always knew that college was the route since I was like 14, 15, really.
Yeah. So you mentioned Millfield, like that's where I met you.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that? How was that, looking back at it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Millfield to me, I mean, I rarely missed home very much. I had a great bunch of mates in my boarding house, and obviously all of us on the golf team were equally as close. And it was the quickest, most fun 2 years of my life, really. To me, there wasn't a lot of difference between being at Millfield and then going to college. Like, they're just equally as fun. So, yeah, I loved it. I mean, did you love it? Did you love Millfield?
I did.
I know it's closer to home for you than it was for me, but, like,
yeah.
I thought it was wicked.
It's just like the boys, like the guys that we were hanging out with, it was just fun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I'll tell you one thing. Go on.
No, I was going to say, you say it literally, it was like college because we do our schedules and it's like, where can we get a double period off and just knock around the par three?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. Yeah, that's it, mate. I thought it was wicked. I mean, obviously, I met you there. I met Matt Sheehan there, who ended up being one of my best men at my wedding. You know, you live in Tampa now. Matt lives in Houston. I mean, this like ongoing journey we've all taken. It's cool that everyone's at least on the same time zone, you know? So it's been awesome.
It's funny how it's all just thing,
I started Millfield in 2008. I mean, that was nearly 16 years ago.
Jesus.
Crazy, isn't it?
I actually just had one of my best mates tell me that the 10-year anniversary is coming up in summer this year.
Yeah.
And I was like, 10 years? Come on. There's no chance. He was like, yeah, mate. 2014, graduated. I was like, oh, yeah, I was a freshman. And he's like, yeah, 2024. It's mad how time flies, isn't it? I mean, you obviously, it's just like playing golf. Do you see time fly? I mean, 16 years is pretty, that's a long time as well, right?
Yeah. It's funny. We moved house about 3 months ago. My parents were just here for a week. And so many people went, oh, I must feel so nice. You know, you moved into a new house. And I went, well, it hasn't really sank in yet. Because I said the week my parents were here was the first week I've actually got to figure out what is in all the drawers, you know. And, you know, not just the last 3 months, but like the last 10 years. I mean, I've literally not been home very often other than in the occasional week off or if there's a tournament, you know, close to home. So, mate, they say time flies when you're having fun. Time flies when you're traveling. That's when it just whizzes past and you blink and you're in the next month. You know, that's crazy.
Yeah. So obviously you smashed college, Nova, LSU, killed it. You've always played the American tours, right? So Korn Ferry, web.com. I was going to say, did you ever want to do a European tour? Or that was always the goal, just stay here, smash America?
So Yeah, when when I turned pro, or when I was about to turn pro, when I was looking at, you know, whether to sign with Titan Estate side back home, you know, possible sponsorship opportunities, people that were, you know, that were part of the success that would be a part of me turning pro, all of my opportunities were in the States, which was fortunate because that was where I wanted to start. So plan A was always, let's try and make this work in the States. So with what very small signing bonus that Titleist gave me, it was like, okay, this is it. This is the coins I've got in my pocket, and let's keep going till we run out, or keep going till I can get myself on a tour. And my first year fresh out of college, I got on the Canadian tour called the McKenzie Tour. I played so bad that year. I think I spent all summer in the pubs and the restaurants up there, just living life as a Canadian more than playing good golf.
Oh.
And I actually lost my card that year in Canada, so badly I played. So that was like my intro to professional golf. It's like, you know, you can't even keep your card on the third development tour. So then I went to Q School. Yeah,
how was that mentally though? Like, you lose your Canadian tour card, you're thinking like, shit, I got to pack it in.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, honestly, at the time I was, yeah, I mean, I went from, you know, high level amateur golf, college golf, where, you know, you play, like, our national championship was at Concession, and we played the course at like 7,500 yards. And then, you know, I did US Ams, and it was at Brookline Country Club, where like you shoot 70 and you're, you know, in the top five. And then you go to the Canadian tour, and it's like, unless you shoot 3 under a 9, you're going to miss the cut. So that was mentally quite like, bloody hell, like, this is, you're playing courses that are shit. You're less motivated because you feel like you've gone backwards with, you know, what you're used to, but yet the scores are so much better. So I kind of had to regroup and figure out, okay, I need to change a few things here. But the experience I had out there in Canada, I went to web.com Q School, breezed through first stage, second stage, and the final stage. I had 4 solid rounds, and I came like 17th at 17 under par or something like that. I remember there was like a similarity. So I got my web.com card. Then I was out there for 3 years before I got out on the PGA Tour, which was 2019. So I kind of, my journey's funny. It's not just professional. I've literally gone Division 2, Division 1, Canadian Tour, Corn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour. So I've hit every step of the ladder, honestly. It's nuts.
But doesn't that build character, but also builds experience? So when you're in that position now that you're on the PGA Tour, because I believe did you lose your PGA Tour card for the season?
Yeah. So 2019, 2021, I was out there, lost my card in 2021. So the year of 2022, I was back to the Corn Ferry Tour. And to your point, like, I went back to the Corn Ferry Tour, and I think in the 26 events, I only missed like 4 or 5 cuts, and just cruise my way to, I don't know, I think I had like 12 top 25s or something. I had a bunch of top 10s, 2 solo seconds. I didn't win that year, but I finished the season 9th on the Order of Merit, which was brilliant. I came second in the last event, actually, to finish 9th. And what is funny is my coach is the director of instruction at the Grove. His name's Darren May. So I've gotten to meet and chat with MJ quite a bit. Like, he calls me by my first name, and that's, you know, sick. I only knew him from Space Jam as a kid. That was a movie where I thought that's who Michael Jordan is. And playing Omaha, which was the last regular season event of that Corn Ferry year when I had to regain my card, I was like one of the bubble boys, right? But I was number 23. And just as a joke, I was like, oh, this is good omen because this is MJ's number. Boom, came second and got my card back, finished 9th. So, it's kind of cool, actually. I have a little bit of credit on that one. Rather than shit my pants, I was like excited because it was, all right, this is a good number, we're going to be fine. So, to your point, like, experience carried us through, you know.
So, being English, as I'm sure the listeners can hear, kind of comparing it to Americans and kind of the American lifestyle and English lifestyle, like, how's that been for you? Going through the last, you know, 10, 15 years on, is that something you've kind of loved, being English, being over here, or?
Yeah, I do, honestly. I mean, we've all been there where you've you've been the center of attention in a room because you've got the accent and obviously it's fun.
Does that help with sponsorships?
There's also the other side of the coin where.
Does that help with Does that help with like sponsorships? Does that help when you were kind of growing the, you know, growing at the start, you know, on the mini tours and stuff? Did that help you kind of grab a little bit of an attention of a member or who it was to sponsor you and kind of think, you know what, he's got a bit of game as well as he's got some personality?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I have my longest corporate partnership is with a guy called Steve Taylor, ironically not related, just have the same last name, who's the CEO of Capstone Logistics. And he sponsors me now. I think this is our fifth year. And the name aside, being from England aside, he just saw a young kid who, you know, funded everything himself. He kind of recognized some talent. And Capstone Logistics being a phenomenal company that does a lot for grocery stores in the States, all the logistical transport and stuff. I think he saw somebody that was different because I wasn't like, you know, the next, you know, son of a wealthy American businessman who didn't have the pressure of, if I don't go to Q school, I've got to go and find a way to make another $5,000. Like, so I think being from England and kind of being over here on my own, you know, might have given me a leg up, you know, in situations like that. But this is also after I've been here for like 10 years. So I think a lot of them were just, you know, impressed by the idea of somebody that's came to the States to chase a dream in sport, which is, you know, got to be by far the most dominant country in the world for sports, right? I mean, they just live and breathe it. So I think it has. I think it certainly has given me maybe an edge on building relationships. And then once I've established those, I think people treat me. It wouldn't matter where I was from, they'll treat me the same. But certainly been very grateful for the relationships I've built. And hopefully it's not just because I'm some funny fat Englishman that I just want to hang out with.
So you're coming off this, well, I guess this year, you had a pretty good year, right, on tour? I guess your best
for you. Yeah, it was my best season for sure. Which is funny because it had the best first half of the season and the worst second half of the season. But you quickly learn, and a lot of experienced guys always said to me, they said, it's not about how good your bad weeks are, it's about how good your good weeks are. Hmm. You know, you could miss every cut all year, but you could win once and then suddenly you're fully exempt for 2 years. So,
yeah,
it was, you know, obviously I'm not going to, I'd try not to highlight the negatives, right? But it has been my best year out there. It was a shame I just missed out on the playoffs. Because in the past, where the playoffs were top 125, this year they made it 170. So, like, finished the year 76, and it's the same as finishing 125 in the past. So, still a great year. Still had a couple runs there. Almost, you know, if it wasn't for Tony Finau going just nuts deep on Saturday, Sunday at Houston, I was in for a chance there.
Yeah.
Played Honda Classic, PJ National around the corner. I came fifth and kind of didn't have a great weekend for that. So it's been a good year, you know. Certainly lots of highs there, and finished well. And now I know I've got every regular season event wrapped up for next year, including the players. So I'll have a full schedule next year, and hopefully go a few better.
Yeah. So you're in the final group in Houston, right, on the Sunday?
Yeah.
And were you in the final group in Hawaii as well? You were right up there in the mix in Hawaii.
Yeah, I think I was the last group or second last group. Can't remember. Yeah. I think I was the last group. I think you're right.
Yeah,
can't remember. I came fourth that week in Hawaii.
Yeah. How's being in the final group on PGA Tour?
So, I think PGA Tour and Korn Ferry Tour, being in the last group, I had many times in the Korn Ferry Tour where I'd get a little bit ahead of myself. And it doesn't do you any good, right? You always can't play as good as you want to. You're a little bit on edge. And then when I got to the last group at a PGA Tour event, because there's like more on the line, it actually made me a lot more comfortable because that forced me more to just focus on the present and not get ahead of myself. Because you just know that if it's on a scale times 10 in terms of money, points, opportunities, it kind of like humbles you a lot more, and you just know, I'm not going to kid myself. I get ahead of myself here because I'm just going to be absolutely fucked. So you just think, let's just really stay in the present because otherwise I'm going to really regret it type thing. So I actually, you know, come sort of Houston when I was in the last group with Justin Rose and Tony Finau. Justin's become an absolute boy since that day. I enjoy hanging out with him. And it was kind of weird because obviously Tony was playing lights out. He was ahead by like 6 or 7. And then I've got who was one of my like childhood heroes on the team with me, who still got it. And this is like 20 years later from when I first knew who he was. And you kind of just feel like you've got no choice but to be very present, and you just stick to your game plan, you stick to your routine, you don't let yourself drift off into the future. And I just put my head down. I mean, I had a decent last day. I didn't quite get it going, but it was freezing cold. And Justin didn't have the best of starts. So once he kind of realized, I think, that he was out of it, he kind of mellowed out and became, you know, it was almost like he was egging me on a little bit, which was nice. And yeah, it's a thin line. I mean, there's been events where I've, you know, ended up 7 shots off the lead, or I've ended up 2 shots off the lead, and either one, you're like just splitting hairs. You think, Christ, as I left a few out there and wasn't far away from the first win. So suddenly the next time in the final group, you're not uncomfortable anymore. You've been there before, and you know how close you are or how close someone else could be, and you just crack on. So it's an interesting thing. A lot of people get really excited about it, but the best thing to do is just almost let the success come to you. It's like the harder you try, the further it's going to go away. So yeah, it's an interesting experience, but one that I've enjoyed being in for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I remember watching those events, the Houston one and the Hawaii one. It's kind of sick going from, we used to play 9 holes at Yeovil and now you're on the Golf Channel.
Yeah, slightly different environment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think it's kind of Mika Richards, a bit of a quote here, but do you think it's sometimes better to kind of slowly build up like your career like you've done than kind of bursting on the scene?
Brilliant. You can say that.
You know what I mean, though? Like, you burst on the scene, you're in there, you say you're top 5 of a tournament and you blow it. Do you think that might have a bit more of a detrimental effect on your career, depending on what your character is, right? But then kind of doing what you did, kind of building up each year, getting better.
Yeah, I think if I was to summarize the career that I would want, I would say that I'd want one, you know, like you said, where you're like a journeyman, where 10 years down the line is when you start to really feature, really start to peak, and you've already been there and done it so many times, you're just only destined for great things. Because everybody, you know, like you said, the guys that burst on the scene and they just win 1, 2, 3 times in a year and suddenly they're top 10 in the world, like, people are only talking about the 1% where they're guys like your Victor Hovlands, where they like do it and then they like prove their longevity. You know, no one talks about the ones that win and then suddenly they can't break 80 2 years later because they've had all the success before they've built the experience. And that's a tough thing to you know, juggle, because sometimes things just happen for guys and, Christ, it's almost better for them to start off badly. Like, talking of Justin Rose, I've read a lot of articles on him and no one talks about when he first turned pro and he, like, you know, missed however many cuts in a row. And if that was any normal person, they probably would have thought, oh, this isn't for me. I dominated as an amateur. I won the silver medal, turned pro, and it's just not meant to be. And look at him 20 years later, the guy's played God knows how many Ryder Cups. He's won on every tour in the world and he's just proven himself every year. So I would like to think that I will be trending towards, you know, my career peak soon, and that I've hit every step along the way to help get me to where I want to be is where I sort of predict just going. So hopefully, yes, hopefully I haven't burst my bubble and that's the best it's going to get. Hopefully it's got some more good stuff to come.
But you're settled though, right? So obviously you said you just moved house. Is that a lot of it? Kind of like the background noise when it comes to family and stuff like that. If everything is good at home and good with travels and good with health and everything like that, does that play a part in how well you play when it comes to the golf, or is it, it's always been pretty sound?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've said to a lot of people, you've got to be happy off the golf course, because if you're not happy with your personal life and then you think golf's going to bring you happiness, then you are on the wrong end of the table, because golf is stressful, it's hard, it can ruin your day quickly, as we all know. And I think since I've had, you know, peace off the golf course, I think is when I've been the happiest on the golf course. So, guys that, you know, don't have a solid support system or, you know, happiness off the golf course, I mean, that's impressive if they can go and string together four good rounds, I think.
What's your, like, day-to-day schedule? Are you, like, a grinder? Are you up early doors, hitting balls? Is there a schedule?
Yeah, mate, in the gym at 4 a.m. every day.
I was waiting for that.
When... do you reckon someone would have believed that?
For a quick second, if we didn't laugh.
So when I'm home, if it's just a normal week and not a week where I've come back from a tournament, I'll make sure 5 out of 7 days are solid days of practice, playing, you know, trying to work on my golf swing. You know, I enjoy the gym. I do a lot of injury prevention stuff, a lot of core. I like to do a lot of, I kind of blend my, like, mobility work with the swing stuff I'm trying to do. I hate being sore when you're trying to play in practice. I think you lose your feel. I've also injured myself in the past going too heavy in the gym. So, you know, I'm certainly more of a golfer and a player than I am, you know, a gym rat. But I do what I can to make sure that I'm still functional. If I'm home for a week, I'll have at least one day where I'm doing nothing. I'm just chilling by the pool, enjoying a couple pina coladas, and then practicing. If I do 5 solid days in a week, I mean, I'll burn myself out if I do 7. Because when I have a solid day, like, I go at it pretty good. So, you know, if I'm coming home after a tournament, Monday, Tuesday will probably be my don't do a lot days, just switch off, and then Wednesday, Sunday, I'll be back at it. I actually, in the new house, just put in a simulator, TrackMan simulator.
Oh, that's the dream.
Yeah, it's upstairs. So,
man's never leaving the house.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because now I'm like, do I just practice and putt upstairs? Yeah. And, you know, but I did it too. Talking of, you know, being happy off the golf course, we all know it's so hot here in the summer. My wife's from Florida, her whole family's from Boca. So, I used to do a lot of, you know, I'd travel away from home in the summer and my weeks off just to be able to go and play and practice in good weather up in Ohio. But I just didn't, you know, it's tough to do that. You just add in on the weeks where you're not home, where you can't, like, switch off. So that was how I sold it to the missus anyway, to put in the simulator upstairs. So there you have it. Got one of those now to have some fun on.
1 a.m. Boys around, few beers,
she's
the simulator.
TSR, she's getting pinged in the sim. That's quality.
So you spend most of your time in Florida, and you just said, I think, Ohio, you said you go up to for the summers?
Yeah. So one of my best friends, Mitch, who was my other best man at my wedding, he coaches up in Columbus, Ohio. So just being friends with him, I would visit him in the summer. Columbus was also where I first got my tour card. That was at the Nationwide Children's Hospital Open. I came second, and it's a great golfing town in the summer. And I'm actually a member at Brookside up there. So in the summers, if I was to, you know, go and practice somewhere, I have access to go there. The members have been super great to me there. That's kind of why I used to go up there quite a bit of my weeks off. I mean, I still will, obviously. I just won't do it as often as I used to in the past because I just, you know, had nowhere to go. So, very lucky that I've got that opportunity up there too.
Yeah. How's the missus about you, you know, traveling and stuff? Does she come with you sometimes or?
So I am very lucky. I don't know how she accepts what I do and she's all for it, but she's good with it. She's a fantastic support system. She's a physician assistant, so she does 12-hour shifts 3 days a week.
Jeez.
So she gets like a, she understands that, you know, it's not just golf, which is something you got to grind on. Mm. And we usually, you know, it's not a rule, but we just try and not do a month apart. So if I'm gone for more than 3 weeks, she'll come to an event. Usually she'll work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then get to come on the tournament days. So it's been good because I enjoy her coming to tournaments. I enjoy her being able to see places that she wouldn't have any reason to go and see. You know, I'm very fortunate. I get to go to a lot of very nice places, but, you know, I'm always on the golf course. I'm always grabbing a quick dinner and then I'm in the hotel room. So, you know, you go to these glamorous places, but I'm not doing what you would do if you went to those places not playing a golf tournament. You know, I'm just kind of, it's like I'm there, but I don't get to enjoy it. So I enjoy it. She gets to come. I think we have a good system where she comes to maybe half a dozen tournaments a year and I'm not, you know, traveling with my wife or family like every single week, because I see guys that do that and that's quite stressful. I mean, you've got to be seriously dedicated to do that, and, you know, then you're the only one that's bringing in an income. So then suddenly you have a few bad weeks and you could be putting some extra stress on yourself. So
yeah. She might be on tour soon if she gets the track now.
Yeah. Mate, if I had videoed her first shot in the sim, which to her credit was with my clubs, not with hers, it was a good job that the sim is still in one piece, honestly. It didn't hit the screen, it hit something else.
Quality.
Yeah.
What's your schedule like? Did you play any of the full series? Just gone?
Yeah, I did all the fall events on the PGA Tour. I had an option to do some of the ones back in Europe, but I just needed to like not go anywhere. I didn't need to go. So I just did the ones in the States. I had best finish, I think, was around 25th at Vegas at the Shriners, was kind of my best finish in the fall. I think I had a top 25 in Napa maybe, or maybe a 30th or something like that. Yeah. And then come Mexico RSM, I was just running out of steam. Plus, all the weeks off, I was coming home to a house that looked like a storage unit, and the door was ringing every 5 minutes for someone else coming in to do something. So it was like
Amazon,
totally checked out. Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting fall for me because usually there's something to play for to start the season.
Yeah,
whether it didn't matter if I played every event or if I didn't play any. Unless I got into that 50 to 60 that guaranteed two elevated events, I was going to be in the same position at the end of the fall than how I started. So I was already kind of mentally checked out the season, honestly. And obviously with all the stuff at the house, it kind of was an extra distraction. So I played them all, kind of did pretty average and was sort of ready for a break and ready to crack on and get ready for next year.
Yeah. What's your schedule looking like next year? Pretty full?
So I leave on the 7th of Jan for Hawaii. I've got Sony Open, American Express in Palm Springs, and then Farmers in San Diego at Torrey Pines. So that's my first three in a row. Then it's Pebble, which is an elevated event. So unless I was to play my way into that, I'll come home that week. And then after that, it's Waste Management, which will be my first time going there. So
sick. Please get a hole in one.
Oh my God.
May the crowd be kind to me.
Actually, you know what? We might actually have to go out there. I've never been to Arizona.
No, me either. I'd love to go.
Yeah. I've been there a bunch. I've never done the tournament. So
yeah, you
if
must
you're there, I might know a guy.
If you got a hole in one, there'll be a lot of Bud Lights flying.
Are you ripping your shirt off like Harry Higgs if you get a hole in one?
The only good thing if I rip my shirt off is it might be a bad sight, but it can only be an improvement to Harry, bless his heart. So at least I got that going for me.
Ben, who's your team? Who's your team?
Football team?
Yeah.
Arsenal.
Oh, you'll be giving the Thierry Henry or Bergkamp knee slide down the fairway if you get a hole in one.
Imagine that.
No, my luck, if I attempted a knee slide, I'll probably stack it and my face would just get cat.
Do a Tony Finau. Remember he did that at the Masters?
Yeah.
With his ankle?
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Par 3 tournament, yeah.
Yeah. Your patella subluxation will go like mine. Knee slide, knee done. Kneecap off it.
I'm not sure what I'll do. Do you know what? I'll make sure it's funny. Whatever it is, it'll make people laugh. I'll give you that one.
I hope so. I feel like it might happen because this is random. I just witnessed a hole in one today. We're talking about one now. It's possible.
Did you? Out on...
Yeah.
No way.
That was the first one I've ever seen out there. Some absolute chopstick. Just thin one to a back left pin.
Wait, on 17?
Yeah.
Oh, it was one. Which tees?
Golds.
It was probably like 170 though. Still good. It was 191 from greens.
Great hole in one.
All right, maybe. Still. Maybe waste management. Is that in March or February, March?
Yeah, it's like last week of Feb or something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Valspar? Yeah. You going to be the Valspar this year?
Yeah. So I forget the order, but after waste management is Riviera, which I won't be in unless I play my way in. And then it's the Florida swing. So it's, I forget the order. I think it's Honda, Bay Hill, Players, and then Valspar. Because Valspar is always like creeping into April, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll be there.
Have you played in the Players before?
So this will make you laugh. I was in the Players Championship this year, which was the first time I was in the Players. But it was the week of my wedding, so I pulled out. Yeah.
You coming into some good form as well, I remember.
Yeah, I mean, I'd just come fifth at Honda the week before. Well, it was Honda, then Bay Hill. So 2 weeks before, had my third top five of the season. And what is funny is everyone on the tour thought I was crazy. They almost tried to hide the fact that I pulled out and tried to sell it like I wasn't in the tournament, which was BS. And now that the Players' Championship next year is $25 million purse, I'm in the Players next year. I've already solidified my spot. So I'm telling everyone now, I'm flipping the coin, and I'm saying it just wasn't enough money for me last year, so I didn't want to play. So this year, I've decided to peg it up.
That's fun. Did you have the conversation at all? Was there ever a thought like, babe, the Players is, I know it's bad timing, but it's the Players.
So a year before, when we were picking our wedding date, which is obviously when I was back on the Corn Ferry Tour, still was in a good position that year. I had every intention to get my card back. I kind of knew I was going to do it. And the wedding venue we wanted was called the Ben Hotel in West Palm Beach. So, like, obviously, the name aside, it was the venue that Taryn wanted. And they had two, we both wanted a spring wedding because we wanted to get married in Florida. We didn't want it to be hot. And we didn't want it to be in any doubt in the rainy season. And they gave us 2 weekends that it was available in March time of the following year. One weekend was the weekend of the Players and the other weekend was the weekend of the Masters.
Oh.
And I was thinking to myself, I was like, sometimes you've got to realize that life is bigger than just playing golf, right? So I thought, okay, if it was the week of the Players and I was in the Players, that meant I've had a really good year so I could live without playing in the Players. And then if the other one was the week of the Masters and I was in the freaking Masters, I would probably be beside myself if, like, I'd have to play, right? So I was like, at least one of them, if I couldn't play it, I've had a great year already. And then blow the whole three top fives, I was probably like 25th on the FedEx Cup by the time the Players was. And it's funny, like everyone like bullied me. The tour was like not happy that I wasn't playing. And anyway, so I just said, do you know what? There's going to be plenty of moments in my life where I'm going to have to make a decision over golf. And this is just probably one of many. And do you know what? I actually got a phone call from Dickie Pride, who's been a good friend of mine ever since my Corn Ferry days. Because my college coach, Garrett Runyon, caddied for Dickie for a half a season before Garrett then coached the Nova golf team. He called me and he goes, I just heard that you pulled out the Players because you're getting married. And I haven't spoken to him at the time for like 2 years. And he goes, that is the best decision you'll ever make. He goes, you're already starting to learn that there are certain things bigger than playing in a golf tournament.
Huh.
And I like respected him a lot for telling me that because everyone else just gave me all this shit and they just tell you that golf's the best thing ever. How could you not do this? And I'm like, well, Is it though? Is there more things that are more important? And that to me was, and it was nice that Dickie called me because there wasn't many people that reached out and actually wanted to tell you you're doing the right thing. Everyone just wanted to tell you that you were crazy. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting story. When Mitch gave the best man speech, he added a few interesting pieces of material, and obviously being there instead of at the Players' Championship was one of them.
That's quality.
So yeah, it is what it is, right? You move on and you have fun doing so. It's my motto, at least.
So let's delve into your like player caddy relationship. We met you at the Valspar in April this year, right?
March, yeah.
So we met you, your caddy. We had a little walk inside the ropes and stuff. How long have you guys been together?
We have been together since March of my Korn Ferry year. So basically, like, almost 2 years, year and three quarters.
How did you get linked up with each other?
So his name's Robert. I met him my first year on the Korn Ferry Tour, so 7 years ago. And he has caddied mostly on the Korn Ferry Tour his career. He had a good run on the PGA Tour with Lee Hodges. And I know he's done a few other bags. So he's probably, including the year with me, maybe done 3 or 4 years on the PGA Tour. When I was looking for a new caddy, obviously the year I was back on the Korn Ferry Tour, I didn't really have any interest in, you know, having someone that didn't have any PGA Tour experience, but then also wanted someone that had done all the Korn Ferry stuff as well. So, you know, when I work with someone as a caddy, I like to have somebody that I feel like is going to be there for the longevity. I don't just want to, I'm not a week by week guy. And, you know, Robert had PGA Tour experience. He'd been on the Korn Ferry for quite a few years also. And I'd known him at the time for about 7 years. So it was quite an easy matchup, really. When I called him, he actually said that he was expecting my call and he felt like it was a good match too. And here we are. You know, he did the most of that Korn Ferry season with me when we regained my card. And, you know, had a good year out there on the PGA Tour too. So he's been very supportive. Been there through most of the success I've had in my career, really.
Yeah. And what's the dynamic on course? Like, is he getting involved with greens and stuff or?
I'll tell you a funny story about him. We were in, I forget the tournament, I think it was Palm Springs or something like that. And I asked him to read a load of putts and we're putting on bent greens. And he's a Southern boy, he's from South Carolina. And he's a funny fella, right? He's got all the dad jokes. He's got all the one-liners. I hear them like 1,000 times. And we like miss a few putts in a row. And he just looks at me and says, do you know what? He goes, I'm not going to lie. I just can't read bent greens. I went, fuck's sake, now you tell me. You should have told me that before I asked you to read them. But that's also what I admire about him because he's just dead honest. You know, he's a Southern boy and he's grown up on Bermuda and, you know, I ask for his opinion when we're on Bermuda greens sometimes, but he's a very realistic human, which is what I respect about him. So, you know, he's great with numbers. He always does the numbers. You know, I kind of run through my pre-shot routine with him and I kind of tell him what I'm thinking and what I'm going to do. And, you know, he'll kind of step in if he thinks it's just absolutely crazy or he'll know that I'm a player that kind of likes to figure it out myself and make the decision myself because that's how I always feel like I gain control more. I think it's only when I'm doing something really stupid that he'll step in and stop me. But it's quite a relaxed partnership. He's kind of one of those where it doesn't matter what the situation is, he's just like the same mellow human. He's not someone that suddenly you're in the last group in a tournament and he becomes like your personal hype man and just goes nuts. Like that wouldn't work for me. And that's not what he's like. And that's, you know, why I like him. So, we've had a few funny times out there. That's for sure.
Yeah. Do you guys hang out off the course as well?
We do a little bit. I've honestly always felt like the most successful relationships with player and caddies are ones where you can limit your time off the golf course with each other, because obviously a practice round is 6 hours plus the 2 hours of practice. A tournament day is 5 hours plus your 2 hours of warm up. So, like, you know, I spend more time with a guy than I do my wife. So, like, you can overdo the minutes together if you stay with each other all the time, eat together all the time. And we do occasionally, don't get me wrong. We're just not, you know, if I'm renting a house, I'm renting it with players, and that'll be when we have our downtime, which I think is very healthy. I think he enjoys his crowd of caddies that he travels with and stuff. And then I've got, you know, my sort of crew of people that I do the same. And I think, you know, that way when you see each other the next day, you're kind of a bit more refreshed. You're ready to be with each other again and get to work. And that to me is kind of what I've always felt works pretty good. So that's kind of the dynamic that we have. And it's obviously proven to be relatively successful.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Does he live in your area as well, or is he somewhere else in the country?
Columbia, South Carolina is where he lives. Right. Yeah. Yeah, so he's, I think he's about a couple hour drive from Charlotte or something. I can't remember, but yeah, he's a southern boy. He's a big Clemson fan. The guy has more orange on him than a teenage girl. He's even got an orange wedding ring. So he's a diehard Clemson boy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's a big Clemson.
That's nuts. Orange wedding.
Yeah. Yeah. People in the pro-ams always go, are you married to Clemson, or are you just married and have a Clemson ring? And he's always like, I'm married, but I have a Clemson ring. It's funny. Every week, someone always asks it. It's funny.
Shoot, as a joke, you get the Gunners on your ring.
Yeah. Quality. Get a little cannonball poking out the side of it.
Oh,
cool. So, goals for the season? Do you set goals for the upcoming season, or you just kind of like go with the flow?
I always have like an objective that I want to achieve, and then I will sit down with my coach, figure out what needs to be done in order to achieve that. And then those will be the goals that I set myself to strive towards. Because I find if you set yourself a goal that is like, I want to win for the first time on the PGA Tour, it kind of blinds you from all the little things that you need to do in order to win. So like my objective next year will be to win for the first time. And then statistically, we'll figure out what needs to be done in order to win, which will be, in my case, improve my driving accuracy, get it a little bit closer when I've got a scoring iron in my hand. And then as long as my putter is, for me, average or better, I know that's good enough to win. So my goals are always very small and achievable that collectively will achieve. You know, I call it an objective because people will set goals that are just not unrealistic, but they're very unlikely. And then you think like, well, how do you feel when you don't achieve half of them or you don't achieve any of them? And I like to set an objective, and my goals are always what can be, you know, realistically achieved that can help me, you know, succeed with the objective that I set. So for next year, yes, that's my objective, to try and win. And I think as long as we tighten up a few areas that have stopped me winning in the past, I think we'll be in for a good chance.
Oh yeah, that's sick.
So I want to ask this as a fellow PGA player for you. What's the deal with the LIV feeling for you personally and the PGA? Like, what's your opinion on it all with everything going on now with obviously John Rahm heading over there and obviously the combination with LIV and next year?
Honestly, I think the way the tour is handling it is a bit of a joke. And I'm not the only person that feels that way. They have done things like limit these elevated events, promise guaranteed points and money in order to keep players from going to LIV, like John Rahm, but then the guy's gone anyway. So, like, what's the point in changing all these things to please the top percentile when, like, if you're offered that much money and that much equity in a team, like, who you can't not go. Like, if someone offered me 1/100th of that, I would probably still go. because like it's you at the end of the day, if life could be a lot less stressful than, you know, the ongoing grind that we face, because the PGA Tour honestly runs the players like dogs. Like, we play way too many tournaments, and there's way too difficult of an avenue to get into these higher tier events. And, you know, I know that what Liv is doing could be somewhat a little bit abnormal, but like, the PGA Tour doesn't own the sport of golf. They just own the PGA Tour. Like, no one's stopping anybody from creating another tour. I mean, it's like if you set up a real estate company in a big town, it doesn't stop someone else setting up a real estate company in a big town and doing better than you do. Like, you don't own the industry. And I hope that players in my position that are kind of the middleman PGA Tour player don't continue to get disappointed at every corner that we go to, because that's the way it feels, honestly.
So for the listeners, can you kind of explain how the Live Tour works with regards to when PGA Tour players then go over to Live? Like, is it an option where you speak to your agent or you speak to somebody who's connected with Live and you go, actually, I fancy going over there, I fancy making 10 million just to head over there? Is it something like that goes on, or is it something where they poach you or they talk to you?
Do you know what? I haven't been approached by Live. I've not been able to discuss what the protocol would be. I've kind of obviously not really been a guy on their radar, so I don't know how it works. I don't know how John Rahm got chatting to them about how he'll be the next big signing, or actually he's going to be the biggest signing. But I don't know how that works. But what I do know is when John signed, which I don't blame him for one bit, I think that he was right to do that, regardless of what he said in the past. I mean, the guy's achieved so much, from winning the Masters, winning Ryder Cups, winning on the DP World Tour, winning on the PGA Tour. Like, he's achieved everything you can. I mean, what else are you playing for once you've done what he's done? So you might as well go to the next big thing. We all got an email straight away, just basically from the tour, basically declaring his forfeited membership to the tour. So basically they said, like, out of the 50 that are locked in for next year's elevated events, because he's out and his you know, FedEx Cup ranking has been removed, then Mackenzie Hughes came in as the 50th player. So I tell you, one person that's having a bit of a party tonight is Mackenzie Hughes, because he's now going to play in 8 events where there's only 70 guys and you play for $20 million. And he's basically become $1 million richer if you come last in every event. So, like, he's probably pretty glad that John Rahm's gone to Live. And other than that, we don't hear if the tour's going to do something else to help our cause. We don't hear if they're going to, you know, react to that, if they're not going to react to that. Like, nobody knows anything, which is the saddest part about it. I only hear news like that from the same media sources that you guys would hear it from. Like, no one tells us, no one explains it, nobody knows what is going on behind the scenes, which is why it's so frustrating. And there's a lot of players out there that I feel very strongly that would agree with me when we say that none of us are very comfortable with what's going on.
And I think that's why a lot of players have shifted over to the Live, right? Because it's the only sport, maybe other than tennis, that you're not guaranteed a check. Imagine, you know, working, you know, 9 to 5 in a job, whatever it may be, Monday through Friday in an office, and then going at the end of it, you haven't really performed that well, Ben, so this week we're actually not going to pay you.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what? I've just done 50 hours of work, 40 hours of work, and you're not paying me? So, you really honestly don't blame the guys that go over there. But when at the start of it, you would probably thought, you know, they're trying to not ruin the game, but they're trying to create a scene of golf that isn't necessarily traditional. And then when they do get the players that they've taken, you know, Dustin Johnson, Cameron Smith, now obviously John Rahm, DeChambeau, all these really, really good golfers, isn't it one of those scenarios where now you're thinking, you know, maybe there's other ways in which you can play golf? Do you think it's a positive way in which they're going towards? I know they've got to break the ice a little bit and kind of make some noise for it to happen. But do you think in 5 years' time we'll sit back and go, that was a good decision, or do you think it's just a mess?
I think that what Liv is doing, honestly, is only a good thing for the game of golf, I think. Because there's been times, like my first 2 years on tour, obviously I'm a rookie out there, other than your contracts, which go up, and yeah, they go up, but your expenses from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour, if you're not just the tightest person ever, they're basically times by 10. The money's times by 10 and your expenses are times by 10. But you still only get paid if you make the cut. And that's when you're playing in a field of 156 with the best golfers in the world. And you've got to be T65 or better, which is almost a third of the field. And I had stretches out there where, you know, I'd miss 8 cuts in a row and I'll be 65 grand in the hole. And I'm just thinking, like, this is a, you know, you're playing these tournaments where the PGA Tour is making a lot of money off of all of us teeing up in the tournament. But then unless you play really, really good, which on the PGA Tour, you have to string together two really solid rounds just to make the cut. And then you've got two more rounds to actually make a paycheck that makes a difference in your month, as opposed to maybe making the cut and kind of coming last, which, you know, say you get a check for 12 grand, well, you pay your caddy 2 grand plus 10%. You've got your flights, your rental car, your hotels, and you get taxed on it. So the 12 becomes 4. And you think, like, it would be nice to play golf where you're guaranteed an income for being there as part of a group of individuals that is making everybody else very profitable. I think the guy should be paid to be there. I think is only a fair demand. And I think the LIV Tour is proving that you don't need to just go and play for a shitload of money because you've already done that and you're worth something. Like, I get the model they have. Like, do I think it's almost like way too much money? Of course I do. But if I was in that position, I'd just be thinking that that's a fair number. But I think if you're on the PGA Tour and you're part of a circuit where there's a lot of people making a lot of money around you, and you only make money if you're one that goes out and dominates a lot of money, I think it, if it changes the needle where guys are going to get compensated just for making it that far, like you do in every other sport, you could sit on the bench and play for Arsenal and you're making more money than someone that comes 20th on the FedEx Cup. And you could be a long snap in the NFL and you could be the second string long snap in the NFL and you're still making probably better money than the guys that finishes 125th on the FedEx Cup. So, like, do I think the needle needs to be shifted where guys are being compensated? Yes. And I hope that with what is going on and whatever the outcome may be, I just hope it changes things for not just a certain group of individuals, but everybody as a whole that plays on the PGA Tour. I think that needs to happen.
Yeah, Liv definitely, it's all of a sudden, you know, the PGA now have found these funds that are now enabling, you know, all these higher elevated events. And it is, you know, you've had to have something like the LIV to
disrupt.
Exactly. You said it, Pat said it, you know, they were just creating a monopoly effect for the PGA. And you know, I think it was 2019 or 2018, Jay Monahan was actually the third highest, he was the third in the money list from the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
With how much you take. And so that, you know, and it came out today as well. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but, you know, Alan Shupnick came out and said something about some guys not named creating a book saying about Rory and his entity within the PGA and what he's been paid. And that's why he was so strongly for the PGA Tour, because his standings went from 10, 20 million now earning nearly over 200 million. So it's very political. And you said it, for someone who's kind of in the middle pack of the PGA Tour, you know, you see the headlines on what we do as the regular person. When do you see the PGA and the LIV shaking hands and really going, okay, now let's kind of work together? I know they did in June, July of this year. We were in Utah. But when do you really see it actually like calming down?
It's a good question, mate. I've honestly got no idea. Everything that's happened has been something that you can't predict, and everything that doesn't happen is something that you wish would have happened. And if I could try and offer some magical knowledge where I could think of what the next move would be, I would say it, but I've honestly got no fucking clue. I mean, it's, if anyone stands there and tries to say what's going to happen next, it's just wishful thinking, honestly. It is a very interesting time to be involved in golf, and it's fuck knows what's going to happen. I mean, it is bonkers.
Isn't that crazy though, for someone who, you know, as good as you are and involved in the PGA Tour and best season yet, you surely would think you've got some sort of stability on tour, and you're literally thinking, like, as you just said, you don't know. You have no clue.
No.
I think that's no idea. As an organization like the PGA Tour, who've been, you know, structured tour now for decades, you'd surely think they would have some sort of grip on the tour, of have some sort of hold with it. But I feel like the LIV have so much money, I feel like they're just taking control of it.
Well, one thing I said from the start, when everyone was saying, the LIV Tour is not sustainable, they don't have a TV contract, they don't have this, they don't have that. You know, learning from owners of football clubs and just where the wealthiest people in the world come from, and people have no idea how much they're worth. They're worth 1,000 times more than people could even imagine. I said, do you really think if they're doing this, they're doing it to try and make money? No. Like, what they just paid John Rahm, one of them probably pulled it out of his fucking pocket. I mean, it's not no joke for these boys. And they're making a difference in the game of golf, which I think is a good thing. And they're just proving to people that they're not in it for an investment. They're not in it for, you know, to try and make money. I mean, if they're trying to make money, that ship has sailed a long time ago. I mean, that would have sailed even when Mickelson was signed, you know. So it's interesting to see. I know things other than the Rahm signing has gone a little quiet, which must mean something's brewing in the chamber. We're going to hear something soon, is my predicament. But, I mean, it's, like I said earlier, it was an interesting time to be on the PGA Tour. That's for sure.
Love it.
Well, there was the rumour that Finau was going, but he squashed that. And Tyrrell Hatton. That's the gossip. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you know Tyrrell at all? He seems like a good lad.
Yeah. So when I played for England before I went to Millfield, he was always a touch older than me, but we played on a bunch of the same England teams together. And he's a good bloke, actually. I've hung out with him a couple times, kind of around driving ranges and player dining and stuff. Yeah. And the stuff he does on the course, the stuff he does off the course, is exactly the same he did when he was 17 years old. I mean, that's what's funny. So, yeah, he's good fun. He is. I haven't seen him since the PGA Championship, so hopefully I'll see him start the year on the Florida swing or something. But it's cool to, you know, that there's a lot of English guys on tour right now on the PGA Tour, which is quite refreshing. So, you know, it takes you to play with one and get to know the other, and then suddenly everyone's kind of all on the same circle, which is nice. So hopefully we can add a few more to the pile next year.
Oh, yeah.
Me and you. So Q School.
We'll be carrying back.
Anyone on tour that's kind of taken a shine to you as a mentor and help you in your career over the last kind of couple of years?
Yeah, Keegan Bradley. He's become a good friend of mine. We have the same coach. So he's been good to me. He always answers the phone if I need him, and we play a lot of practice rounds together. Through Keegan, I met Brendan Steele, who is class act. He's a lovely fella. Don't blame him either one bit for going to live. I mean, he's won 3 or 4 times on tour. He's proven himself to be a loyal ambassador to the PGA Tour. He doesn't owe them anything. It's cool to see him go and join Phil and be on the same team. And one of my best mates down here is Robert Allenby, who, when I lived in Orlando before I moved down here full time, I didn't have a place down here yet, so he used to stay in his guest house. He's been a good mate to me, kind of like a big brother. See him every time I'm home. He actually just had a major back surgery. He just had to remove some herniated discs, so he's on the mend, and hopefully he'll be up and running and getting back to playing out in the Champions Tour soon. So you know, I'm lucky. I've got a couple of guys that pretty close with, that been there and done it. I mean, look at Keegan's career. It's not just this year. He's been a serious name for 10 plus years. And you know, Roberts, he's had a long of a career as anyone else out there. So got a couple of guys that I know I can rely on, and I pick their brains when I need to. And you know, I think because they've been there and done it, they're always happy to offer a helping hand and hopefully try and follow in their footsteps.
Oh yeah. Have you met Tiger or Rory, any of the major big shots?
I haven't really spoken much with Rory. I've probably been in his company two or three times. I've only had one interaction with Tiger, and it was my first year on tour. It would have been 2020, so it would have been that January of 2020 at Farmers Insurance. And I finished on the North Course on Friday, finished on the ninth hole and made birdie on the par five. And my name on the leaderboard was right above Tiger Woods. So I get off the course, I got like 150 text messages going, oh, I can't believe you're playing with Tiger, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking like, well, I've gone down the leaderboard and we might be next to each other, but I'm actually the group in front of him, not in the same group.
Yeah.
So obviously the tee times come out and I get all these texts again, oh, sorry, you know, I didn't realise, blah, blah, blah. And so I walk up, well, before I get to the tee, I go in the locker room just to grab some stuff out of my locker. And all the lockers every week are in alphabetical order. At Farmers, they kind of bring in these like portable lockers, so they're really small. So where I'm T, W is only like three lockers down, and these lockers are tiny little things like you get in school. And I'm in my locker tinkering around, and I kind of like shut the locker door, and like right next to me is Tiger Woods in his locker. I didn't even realize he was there. So he can obviously tell. I was a bit like, oh, fucking hell. And he just looks over and just smiles and goes, what's up? He just knows that I'm like, fucking hell, it's Tiger Woods. It's just me and him in the locker room on our own. And he just doesn't have to say shit. And he like makes me jump out my boots. And then I think that I was grabbing a couple of things before heading to the putting green. And then I go to the first tee. And that was probably like my 10th event on tour that year. So it was kind of the first third of the season. And we walk out to the first tee because obviously Tiger's the group behind. And it literally looked like the Ryder Cup. I mean, it was like, all around the ropes, the whole hole was just this big peanut-shaped gallery of 10 people deep. And that's when the heart started racing. And I was like, fuck me, this is what the PGA Tour should feel like. And it was kind of cool because my dad flew over from England into San Diego with one of his mates. So they got to watch me play in front of Tiger, which was nice. I didn't even need to play with him to feel what it's like to have him, you know, his presence around you. But that was funny in the locker room. He just laughed at me with his big grin and just went, what's up? Oh, fuck off.
Who are you? You said that. Are you fucking
who
looking at?
Who the fuck
at?
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, you're Woods, are you? Big man.
Oh, yeah. It was. He didn't need to say anything. It was just a cool moment. You know, it was one of them things.
You walk back in, get an autograph, mate. Yeah.
Well, what was funny is I was proper nervous on the first tee, and I just somehow the adrenaline kicked in and I absolutely punched this thing. Like, it went 30 yards further than normal. Obviously, must have just hit them a good bounce or something. Because I get up to the ball and I'm like 110 yards short of this green. Usually it's like a 7-iron. And then reality kicked in and I kind of pushed it and plugged it in the front right bunker.
Tiger's watching hacky hour trap. He's like,
it was funny, but yeah, I obviously wish I could have played with him, but playing in front of him was pretty cool.
Who's the best player you play with, but then also who's the
worst player
by you? Who's the character on tour that you played with who you didn't expect him to necessarily be like he was?
Oh, I know there's a couple in there somewhere. I'm struggling to think because obviously I've played with so many, but God, there's got to be someone there. I played with there's others, but just come into my head. I played with Emiliano Grillo in Mexico shortly before he won at Colonial. And if there's someone that just swings it where they're just going to hit driver straight down the middle every single time, like, he was one of them. That was impressive. You know, dare I say, I think he's almost underachieved in his career because of how pure every aspect of his game is. There's still no better ball striker out there to me than Keegan. Keegan is just, it's just a machine. No one, I think, hits it better than he does with every club in his bag. Christ, there's always a few out there where they just strike you how good they are, but I just can't remember off the top of my head because I play with so many different ones every week. There's a lot more than you think that just slap it around and you think, how the fuck has this person won on tour? not going to name any names, but there's more than you'd think. But you play with a few and you go, Christ, if they can do it, I know I can. But yeah, there's the standard out there is exactly as people say. It is a seriously good standard. I mean, I've played with guys that have just hold the world, chipped and putted lights out, and they've, you know, they're like leading the tournament. And you just think, like, Christ, you know, they didn't even hit a fairway. Then I've played with some where they've hit every green and missed the cut, and you're like, Christ, it just goes to show, like, you just have one aspect of your game that is below average standards out there, and it just means you can't compete. So, like, everyone is, you know, everyone out there is very gifted and talented, and they've worked their socks off to be out there. So, it's a very, very high standard. Like, people, I think people get fooled by what you watch on TV because it just shows the guy that's having a day, you know, of the week. But you go out there and you play with these guys, and it's not far off, let me tell you. It's pretty high end out there.
And within this podcast, you know, we've had a few guys on, but, you know, we had David Geese, and then Pepsi, which is Keegan's caddy. You know, and they kind of, you know, dive deep into, like, you know, I feel like it is, other than tennis, really, it's the only sport that you're really on your own, and the downtime that you have and the ups and downs is just like none other. You don't have a team around you other than your friends and family and maybe coaches, but it really is a unique sport.
Yeah. No, I agree. If there was a tour out there which gave you a chance to play for the money that the PGA Tour does, and it was like a team format where you had like a team coach and you had like the banter in the locker rooms and the shit you have with all other sports, I would much rather do that than be on my Jack Jones when you have a good day or a bad day. And I'm telling you, it's, like you said, people don't realise, but like, if you play shit, you are the only person that gets to soak that in. And then when you play really good, you're still competing against multiple other guys that are also playing really good. Like, you've got no teammates that are going to, you know, just fake you across the line if you're having a bad day. Like, golf, if you have a bad hole, let alone a bad day, like, it's written on the scorecard, you know. So, but it's also what separates the sports from the others, right? It's what makes everybody... you know, makes their talents and their skills, you know, a lot more noticeable, which is kind of why I think a lot of us feel like we should be compensated for that. So it's something I've always done. I've played golf since I was 4. I'm still learning about it now, which is 27 years later. I'm 31. You know, hopefully we keep on learning a few things along the way and keep, you know, improving how we play. And hopefully this crazy career that somehow managed to muster up just keeps on going.
Yeah, 2024. Come on.
Hell yeah. Well, we should probably wrap it up. We've taken up a lot of your time this evening.
Yeah.
You've got a curry in the microwave as well.
I did a faux soup and it's 8:15 and I'm fucking starving.
Oh. Yeah, misses his fuming. She's at the dining table thinking, where the fuck is he?
Yeah,
for a shepherd's pie.
Yeah. If it was shepherd's pie, I would have come on a lot later, that's for sure.
Giving it one
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's meatloaf, isn't it? That's why you stayed alive.
Oh. Well, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much for coming on, having a chat with us.
No problem.
You'll have to Valspar week. You'll have to come out to our place again. Come and play with us. The members.
Yeah, I know.
I tell all my members, my regulars, they're always checking in on you. I'm like, yeah, man. He said he'll come through and play. Just let us know.
Yeah, I will, mate. I promise I will. I'll be there. I'll try and get there a bit earlier. Come and play with you boys. Go out for a couple of beers or something. Hopefully, hopefully I get to see you before then. But if not, it's only 2-3 months away. So it'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we'll wish you the best of luck. Start of the season. We'll be tracking you.
Yeah. Thank you. You boys have a great Christmas. You boys both staying here for the holidays or going to England?
I'm staying.
Leaving. Going back home. Kent. Gonna be good. First time in a while, so looking forward to it.
Oh, nice.
What are you doing? Cool. Staying?
Yeah, my parents are here for a week, so I'm staying here and just doing Christmas with the wife's family. So I'm here. I literally didn't want to have to get on a plane if it wasn't for Hawaii. So I'm trying to being at home as long as I can.
Yeah.
So, I'm here. So try and behave myself. Well, thanks so much for having me on, boys. Enjoyed that.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
I'll see you on the West Coast in a couple of months.
Yeah.
Love thanks, it. Ben. Cheers. Appreciate it, buddy. Have a good one.
Thank you.
And there we have it.
Great episode. Great conversation.
Top end, high end, top end.
He's just a good lad, isn't
he? High end, he is.
You'd never know he plays on PGA Tour. He's just like one of the boys, you know.
I didn't violate him. I didn't violate him with his bio saying that he was 200 pounds.
What are you trying to say?
Well, that's what he said. He was going to violate me. He's kept talking about his weight. I was like, honestly, mate, you look all right. You look in good shape, big man.
I forgot to say, he sent me a text because we were like texting, sorting out the time for the call and stuff, blah, blah, blah. And the last message he sent me was, is this going to be a bearable occasion? And obviously he was drinking a Dos Equis or a Modelo the entire time, quality.
Yeah, of course, always is. But no, he's a good lad, very good lad. Obviously you know him way better than me. But no, unbelievable player. When I met him, from my perspective, was when we were at the Valspar. Unbelievable player. Just what you'd expect a geezer to be like on the PGA Tour. But we, as you heard, you dove into the depths of being on the PGA Tour, what he thought of Liv, the structure in which he goes about himself, the travel time, the support system, you know, everything that went from coming up from D2 to D1 to Korn Ferry to PGA to back to Korn Ferry. So I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's always good to have a catch up with an old pal who's also one of the best golfers in the world. We're talking top 100 in the world. He's maybe just outside now, but that's crazy. Just to be able to say you're up there with the top 100 players in the world. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. And no, I thoroughly enjoyed it because he's a fellow Englishman. He's a fellow Englishman.
And off pod after we recorded, he showed us his dinner. Turns out he was sat in the kitchen just sniffing his dinner the whole time.
Honestly, he's a man with strong will because that looked an unbelievable soup.
No, it looked pretty solid.
It was some
sort
of like chicken.
It was a pho, a pho.
Oh, yeah.
One of them like Asian soups. No, pho.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Pho. Oh, you know what? Put that in with some toasted chia butter bread. Telling you what. He's had an absolute touch. I don't know how he's not dug into that mid-pod.
Anyway, I hope he enjoyed his dinner after our conversation. So,
quality.
But yeah, we should probably wrap it up. It was a longish conversation. Long pod this week. Back to normal program. Maybe not, because we're going to have a little Christmas. You're going to be out of town.
Yeah, but we got a few pods. We got a few pods going. Not only this as guest week, we've got a pal of mine that's going to jump on.
Your ex-boyfriend?
Nope.
No?
No.
Still a bit awkward with him?
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys haven't made up.
So, going to jump on him. We're going to talk
about... You want to jump on him?
Jesus Christ.
You said it.
We're going to jump on with him. And then obviously we have a pod. And then obviously we'll have a little Christmas go. Christmas go around. Obviously, you're in a bit high more spirits now that the Christmas potentially might not be cancelled.
I may have to cut this out because there's rumours from the top.
But yeah, I hope you thoroughly enjoyed it. Please give us your feedback. I do love getting a perspective from a PGA Tour member, PGA Tour caddy, because it is the best sport, top two best sports in the world.
Top two?
Yeah, so football.
You were about to say soccer
as
well.
I nearly did as well.
How dare you?
Soccer, football, and then golf.
Football.
Football.
All right, well, yeah. As Marcus said, subscribe.
Subscribe.
Listen, review. Tune in. Follow on the links, the OnlyFans, blah, 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 blah. Promo code
in the hoop.
In the hoop. First week free.
All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again. Episode 63. Live.
Laugh. Lose.